I thought we might start by looking just very briefly at the Western United States and the legal system under which water is allocated within the individual states of the Western United States. And then perhaps focus down on Boulder and Boulder's supplies of water, the way that's priced and the relevance of price to the way we make use of our water. In the Western United States, we have a legal system called appropriations doctrine, which means that water users are able to establish rights to the use of water by diverting water from a stream or a lake or from the ground and registering that use with a water court, which then establishes for that user a water right. These water rights are defined in terms of how much can be taken and when during the year this water can be taken. But the water right then is considered personal property. Water rights can be bought and sold, subject to clearance through the water courts. In the Western United States, we have quite active water markets for these water rights. They're traded continually. There are brokers who specialize in buying or connecting buyers and sellers of water rights. Much of the market activity in water rights is really the sale of agricultural water rights to cities and industry as cities and industry continue to grow, because most of the water rights are actually held in the agricultural sector. The agricultural sector consumes about 85% of the water supplies in the Western United States, so they hold the mass of water rights. But the farmers recognize, although water right doesn't have a you don't have to pay for the use of a water right once you have one, but the user, the holder of a water right, particularly the farmers, recognize that their water rights are highly valuable. They can be sold at these days at very high prices. So although the agricultural users don't face a price for using water that's provided by their water rights, they recognize that if they can cut back and conserve on their water use, they're more careful with their water use, the water that they save can then be sold on the market at high prices. So in terms of pricing in the agricultural sector, they're not prices the way we think of them, getting a monthly bill or something like that for the use of water, but every farmer out there recognizes that the water they're using is marketable, can easily be sold or leased at quite high prices these days. So that the agricultural sector has active water markets. The water markets set prices. Farmers don't have to sell their water, but they recognize that if they can conserve some of their water, it can be leased or sold. Well, let's look at Boulder's water supply a little bit. Where does Boulder's water come from? Well, primarily it comes from a large watershed, mountain watershed west of Nederland, that catches a lot of snow in the wintertime, which then gradually melts off starting in the spring, early summer, through the late summer. And this snow melt is captured in several reservoirs up in the watershed and diverted down through pipelines through Boulder Canyon. And that water goes, in this particular case, the water is piped into a water treatment plant up Boulder Canyon, the Batasso Water Treatment Plant, where the water is treated, cleaned, and put into a complicated set of pipelines to serve the city. The city also has water supply provided by the Northern Colorado Water Conservancy District, which is headquartered in Berthoud. And that district manages the Colorado Big Thompson Project that brings water over from the western slope into reservoirs around Lake Estes. And that water is then distributed up and down the Front Range. Boulder owns shares in the Northern Colorado Water Conservancy District, and each share entitles the holder to a certain percentage of the water that's available to the district through its diversions from the western slope. And again, these shares in the Northern District are saleable. Boulder has a wonderful portfolio of water, part of it consisting of traditional water rights that I was talking about first, and secondly, consisting of shares in the Northern Colorado Water Conservancy District. A few years ago, I made an estimate of the value of Boulder's water rights portfolio because the water rights that are held by Boulder and the shares, including the shares from the Northern Colorado Water Conservancy District, these shares have a value much, much, much greater than the physical plant, the pipelines and the treatment plants and that are owned by the city water utility. A curious feature of our water pricing, let's look at Boulder's water pricing structure. If a new customer, a residential customer, business customer, industrial customer, comes into Boulder and wants to be served by the water system, they pay what's called a plant investment fee. It's just an upfront fee that is supposed to cover the cost of the additional capacity that the system will have in order to serve them.
Is that also known as a tap fee?
Pardon?
Is that also known as a tap fee? So certain districts call it a tap fee.
Tap fee.
What developers have to pay to basically plug into the system.
In Boulder, we call it a plant investment fee, but a fairly substantial charge when the service is first extended to a new user. Then we have what is now common throughout the West, a schedule of charges for water that we call an increasing block rate structure, in which the lower, that means that a certain number of thousands of gallons are provided to the user at a low price per thousand gallons. And as the user increases demand for water, the over larger numbers of gallons per day, the price goes up. Now, why? First of all, the initial prices in this increasing block rate is like a stair step going up. The initial blocks are low priced, because we have many users who are low-income users, small householders that can't afford to pay high prices for water.
So it's the essential use. You don't want to overcharge that because it's what people need to live on, essentially.
Yeah, that's quite right, Maeve. As individual users' use increases, they face increasing prices per thousand gallons as their use expands. And what's the justification for this? Well, first of all, as they expand their use, they add to the total demand on the entire water system, and they indirectly really require additional capacity for the system. When you go to the very high users, they can be householders, they can be industries, hotels, but the very high users that use large quantities of water, particularly exert their demands during what we call peak hours of water demand. They tend to add to those the demand for water during those hours of the day when the pressure is greatest on the supply system. And there, it's these peak demands that determine the needed capacity of the system. So the users, the very high volume users, do require the system capacity to meet their demands, and they're charged quite high prices, representing the additional capacity that they require the system to hold. The Northern Colorado Water Conservancy District, it has a very active water market. The shares in the Northern District that allow the holder to use water that's provided by the Colorado Big Thompson Project, these shares are readily traded. They're trading in the market for these shares every day. And for traditional water rights, we also have active water markets that establish prices. So again, looking at Boulder gets its water from its own watershed high in the mountains and from the Colorado Big Thompson Project through the Northern Colorado Water Conservancy District. And it utilizes an increasing block rate structure by which charges are made to its customers.
So Denver Water has also got that increasing block structure. They've reduced their tiers from 4 to 3. And really, you see quite a significant significant increase in your price per unit of water once you go beyond that essential use, because a lot of people are using that for irrigation. And they say they're doing that to encourage more conservation, because then people will see the more you use, the more you're going to pay. Do you think that's an effective strategy to encourage people to really conserve water by pricing it in that way?
Oh, very, very definitely. I mean, there is a large number of studies of water demand, the way customers, residential, commercial, industrial, respond to prices. And we know that as prices go up, users of every class do reduce use. Well, there are a few mavericks out there that say, what the heck, I'm rich, I'm not going to pay attention to price. But the mass of users, residential or commercial or industrial, definitely pay attention to the price of water and gauge their uses of water so that they're not dumping costly water onto low-value uses. So very well established that users are sensitive to water prices.
It seems that we've talked about Boulder, Denver Water as well. They have that increasing block rate structure. Is that pretty common in most of Colorado? Are there other water utilities or water providers in the state that are using quite a different approach?
Oh, I think the increasing block rate structure is widely used in Colorado and in all the western states, and in fact, almost uniformly across the United States. There are a few towns that have a uniform rate where you pay a certain amount per 1,000 gallons that doesn't, where the price doesn't increase with the amounts used. But that's recognized as a failure to reflect to the customer the cost that they're imposing on the system. So it's almost uniformly the case that the urban water utilities are using the increasing block rate structure.
When we're talking about very well-established water rights that are being held by utilities, so Boulder has very senior water rights, so does Denver. I'm not sure if they're acquiring new water rights all the time, but I know new development, because there's a lot of new development, particularly along the Front Range, and some of those newer communities have to actually acquire new water rights. And this is where we were talking about the cost of, or the value when farmers sell their water rights, it can be a very valuable prospect for the farmer. Often the water has more value than the land that they actually own. And so is that something then that utilities have to consider? So maybe we're seeing in newer communities more expensive water because they have to factor in the cost of actually buying those new water rights.
Well, very definitely. That new communities, expanding communities, do have to acquire water rights. But water is scarce in the Western United States. We don't have unlimited supplies at all. And one can look at the prices, recent prices that have been paid for shares in the Northern Colorado Water Conservancy District. Each share that represents something like 7/10 of an acre foot of supply each year. These shares are selling for tens of thousands of dollars, so that a new community or a new industry will have to buy some existing water. It's very difficult to establish new water rights at this point in time because there are so many water users that have already established water rights, and these water rights have priorities. The old water rights, long ago established, have first priority and first call on the water. And if a new residential area wants to try to establish a new water right of its own, it would be, as we call it, so junior. They would be so low on the totem pole in terms of when they can actually take water from that water right, that all new uses essentially must acquire existing water rights. And these water rights these days really have very high prices.
Do you think that we are pricing water appropriately for water users? And I'm thinking really more municipalities, not agriculture or industry, but do you think people are being charged enough for water when we think about how scarce a resource it is, how valuable it is, and all those other considerations that we've talked about?
Well, as we've mentioned, all the utilities essentially today are using the increasing block rate structure for the reasons that we reviewed. There is an exception to this that I think you may have talked with others about, that most urban utilities do have a portfolio of water rights. These water rights typically have very high value. The portfolios are very highly valued. And the value of these water rights greatly exceeds the value of the physical plant and the pipelines and stuff that owned by most utilities. And yet, these water rights are generally not recognized in setting prices for water for urban users. If an urban water utility is privately owned and falls under the jurisdiction of the Public Utilities Commission, presumably a privately owned for-profit water utility is allowed to earn a certain percentage return on their assets, on the value of their assets. And yet, these utilities do not list the value of their water rights as part of the assets on which they can earn a return. Somewhat.
Why?
Tradition, I guess. The practices and regulations regarding public utilities have not been really clarified in this area. For example, if Boulder were a regulated utility, as it would be if it were privately owned, if Boulder were to charge, let's say, a 5% return, or be allowed to charge a 5% return on the value of their water rights, it would add probably about $1.50 to each of the steps in the increasing block rate structure, probably would add something in the way of $25 or $30 per month to the typical household water bill. So we don't charge enough for our urban water, really, because we're the typical water utility being publicly owned, not being subject to regulation by the Public Utilities Commission, simply does not charge the customer for the value of the raw water that they're treating and then providing to the customer, that the prices we're charging reflect the costs of gathering water, treating water, distributing water, but not the value of the raw water itself. So in a typical urban setting in Boulder, but throughout the West, we're not reflecting adequately the value of the raw water that's being provided.
And I suppose that might be because it is such an essential thing. We can live without our iPhones. We can live without phone service. We can maybe even live without electricity, but we cannot live without water. So do you think that's part of it, that really it has to be priced that way because it is so fundamentally essential to everybody's lives?
Well, I mean, water, of course, is a unique resource, but and people speak of, you know, we couldn't live without water, and of course we couldn't, but that's not the management question. The management question is, after having provided basic water supplies for human needs, the real question is how do we use most effectively the larger volumes of water that each utility provides daily? What about those big users in the commercial sector or the hotels or the industry that use large quantities of water? You know, they have a great deal of flexibility in how much water they actually have to use. They have ways of conserving water if they have the motivation to conserve water. And so the idea of charging higher prices to the large volume users under a city water utility is a way of inducing them to utilize the conservation steps that are economically sensible to them, so that the value to which they're putting their water is equated to the cost that they're putting on the system at the margin of their use.
So if I could maybe be so bold as to paraphrase, water is essential to life. We need it to bathe. We need it to drink to survive. But golf courses may be less so. And so we have to look at the value of where we're using the water.
Well, that's right. We use a great deal of water in urban irrigation on the golf courses, as you have said, in part in feeding some of the urban lakes around our towns, watering the mediums of our roadways and so on. So there are a lot of low value uses that the urban areas are using. Let's see, where do we go from here?
I think that pretty much wraps it up. And so do you see that, you know, pricing methods continuing to evolve as we have more and more people coming? The state demographer is projecting, I don't know the exact number, but a lot more people are moving to the Front Range. There's a lot more people who are going to need access to that water. Do you see us continuing to really examine how we are pricing water and potentially increasing those prices for different water users as all of those people are coming here and need that water?
There's not much question about where the water is going to come from our rapid expansion of, and particularly in our urban areas. It's going to come from agriculture. You can argue, it's not nice, we need the agriculture, but the farmer's wealth is in his or her water. Prices of agricultural water are going higher and higher by the month. The shares in the Northern Colorado Water Conservancy District, which is an alternative supply for Front Range communities, are going up and up. So there will be a continuing movement of water from agriculture as agriculture finds it worthwhile to conserve on water, to change cropping patterns, to be more efficient in their application of water. Leasing the resultant savings to urban areas. Any new establishment, any new use is going to face increasing prices. And as water becomes increasingly scarce, other resources like clean air and energy. As the resource becomes increasingly scarce, prices are going to go up. And they should go up to guarantee that water is being placed, allocated to highly high-value uses and not dumped on the ground in excessive irrigation of golf courses or whatever.
Well, Chukwu, thank you very much.
Well, Maeve, nice talking with you always, and the good state, your good station. And there are many interesting things going on in the water sector. So keep your eye on the water news.